Welcome to Classical Conversations. I'm Haley Taylor, really excited to bring you this conversation today as it is kind of a perfect setting as Halloween is just around the corner. We're talking to Michael Shapiro, an American composer, conductor, and author, and we're talking about his film score to the 1931 classic Frankenstein. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Haley. Great to be here.
So let's talk about this project. I mean, it's such an iconic film. It doesn't really have an iconic film score attached to it when it originally came out in 1931. So how did you get involved in then writing a film score for, again, Frankenstein?
The 1931 film does not have a film score. It has open credit music, which is stock music at the time, and end credit music, which is stock music of the time. It's got a little bit of an oom-pah-pah scene in a village square, which was recorded live when they recorded the film. It's a talkie. It's not a silent movie like Metropolis or Intolerance. It is a talkie, 1931. But at that time, Universal Studios did not have a second track on the film stock to have music. That only started going full speed in 1933 when RKO put out King Kong with the great score of Max Steiner. And then, of course, we were all off to the races. So in 2002, I was approached by the Jacob Burns Film Center up here in northern Westchester to write a live film score to the classic movie. It was my idea because I'm a big Universal Studios early monster movie fan. And I wrote a dramatic score. And since then, it's had 50 productions worldwide, from Russia, St. Petersburg, to Norway, where I opened up the Bergen Festival with it. The recording we're going to hear shortly with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, the great orchestra in the UK, and then performances all over Canada and the United States.
And being a fan of these 1930s horror films, like these monster movies from Universal, was there a sense of trepidation in starting to write the score, nerves in any way, in beginning this project since you were so familiar with the films and the themes and the characters for such a long time?
It was a joy, because I've been a fan of Frankenstein, which is the great kahuna, the great mother of all of horror films. It's the greatest one ever made. It's a classic film. AFI, American Film Institute, top 100 list. But remember, I was born in 1951, 20 years after this film was first out. My father was 13 years old when he saw it at some theater in Brooklyn. He told me that for 1 week he could not sleep. He had nightmares. It was so horrific. The movie's a serious movie. It's not like The Bride of Frankenstein, which is more of a romp. It's a serious movie with serious ideas about, you know, someone who did not reckon upon God to create from dead tissue a living monster. But, you know, the way James Whale did it, we get to have sympathy for this monster by the end. And we're worried about Henry Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, because he's so obsessed with his vision that he forgets what he's done and also forgets his love for his young bride, Elizabeth. So it's really an amazing drama. And I wrote a score that a composer like me, coming from my background, would write a score in 2002. And it's always played live with the film, which we licensed through Universal Pictures. And they've been my partners in since 2002 doing this, licensing it. It's really quite brilliant. And there are different orchestrations. There's a chamber version, chamber orchestra, which was the premier version, 15 players. But I also have a full orchestral version, and that's the overture you're going to hear, which is recorded by the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. And there's also a wind ensemble version that was done by the Dallas Winds and by many, many other wind ensembles throughout the world. And then there's a choral version and a new operatic version, which uses the Latin Requiem Mass as its libretto. Incredible stuff.
I noticed that. I wanted to talk to you about that, the four different versions of the score. Like you mentioned, the chamber orchestra, the full symphony, the wind ensemble, and then the operatic version with the libretto being the Latin Requiem Mass. And kind of wondering what was behind creating those four different versions instead of keeping it to just a symphony orchestra, but creating all these different colors with all these different versions of the score.
Well, there are the only recording that, for copyright reasons, is of the overture. The piece is played under license with Universal, you know, of the film, live with an ensemble, and the film. Now, how did the other orchestrations, instrumentations occur? It started as 15 player and then organically got bigger and bigger. And I then was asked to do it with the Virginia Symphony, and I did. It was premiered there. It's been done by many orchestras since. And you have, of course, this recording, which we're going to hear. But then things developed, and then we were talking about doing a wind ensemble version, which was thought by friends of mine in the wind ensemble world is something that should be done. So I then orchestrated it with the help of a friend of mine, Doug Richard, who was the orchestrator of the West Point Band for many years, to make a band version. So we made a band version. And then I had the thought, well, maybe there should be a choral version and an operatic one, the choral and operatic being kind of interchangeable. And I had the thought of, well, what is the Latin Requiem Mass all about? It's about resurrection. And this film is kind of a evil resurrection story. So it works very, very well. So we're hoping for the premiere of the operatic version when we get out of our monster pandemic.
Right, exactly. Well, before we get into the monster pandemic, I wanted to, again, you mentioned films like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and how this score is different from those experiences. How is this film score different than and the other work that you've created or the other like processes that you've gone through? How is it different in the process of creating this particular score?
Oh, it's quite different because remember, every time a conductor does this, I don't have click tracks or streamers the way they do, you know, technical clicking to the film, which you, if you see Lord of the Rings, the music is in the absolute section where Howard Shore wanted it to be, with streamers or with click track, and everybody's wearing headphones. And you know, my score is spotted by the conductor. I tell the conductor where to come in and where to leave that particular spot of music. So every time it's done, it's different, and conductors view it very differently. I know that when I do it, I know where the music should go. But even when I do it, I may emphasize an instrument differently than I did the night before. And that's what makes it so, to use the phrase, alive, than it is different in a click-tracked score. But also, I did not work with the director. James Whale died in the 60s or 50s, you know, in his pool. And if you've seen the film Gods and Monsters with Ian McKellen playing James Whale, it's a tragic ending to this great director. I never dealt with him. We didn't spot the film together. When I do film scores now, you know, I meet with the director and we spot where the spots will go, and we talk about what is the director looking for, and you try to meet their and exceed their expectation. Here, I had to think about what was James Whale doing in that creaky scene without music and make it better. One thing that I find that's remarkable, people tell me, is that when they see the movie with the ensemble on stage, they understand there's a conductor and a live ensemble with the 1931 film, and it fills halls. It's sold out all the time. But after about 5-6 minutes, they don't see me anymore, or the conductor, or the wind ensemble, or the full orchestra, whatever it is. It all becomes connected. So they watch the movie, and they're so taken by the accumulation of early talky sound, British sounding actors, and my music, that they forget we're there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It becomes a new art form. It's magical.
And for you, as someone who, as you mentioned, was a fan of this film and a fan of these Universal monster movies,
yes,
have you learned something maybe new about the film? Have you taken something new out of it in the process of writing a score to it? And I'm sure watching it so many times with a new set of eyes, kind of looking for where the music should appear and disappear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Whale's great genius in this great film was that it's personality-driven, it's person-driven, it's humanity-driven. And my score was written to really make richer and more deep the human and monstrous development of person-to-person and person-to-monster interaction. So, for example, we've just met, I haven't seen you, and the music that of us just meeting is more formal, you know, and we don't know each other. We're, as it were, learning about each other as we do this interview. But should I meet you on the street some future time and you say, I'm Haley and I did that interview with you on radio, I'll go, Haley, it's so great to physically see you now. We weren't on Zoom. We were on the phone at the time. And my music will be different. Mm-hmm. And your music will be different, you know, because it's familiarity. when we first meet the monster, my music is dead. It's without overtone. Although it's low music, I use an electronic keyboard sound, which is almost devoid of overtones. But as the monster develops in the film, my music develops with the monster. This is all done sub rosa, underscoring. You may not notice it, but your watching, listening experience is, I think, made better and more rich and more deep and not creaky, like Lionel Martin said about the original, than it might have been. So the famous scene that people use is the Star Wars scene that everybody's seen in the first Star Wars, where they have this kind of throne room scene with everybody, you know, in their seats in a big throne room, and you hear John Williams, bum, 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 you know, this mm-hmm, great, mm-hmm. And then this kind of march into the throne room. And, you know, it's a triumphant end of film, end of first Star Wars. And then they go into the credits, jump, 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 and you hear the Star Wars theme. They have done that. I've seen examples of that scene being shown without music.
Right, right.
You know, of them marching in and then staring at everybody and having this kind of throne. Yeah. It's boring. You know, it has no... Can you imagine the shower scene? Hitchcock wanted the shower scene in Psycho done without music. He thought it would be more effective. And Bernard Herrmann came in and he said, listen to this. You know, it's like, and Hitchcock went, wow. It's interesting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We can provide magic to the magic of the direction and the acting and the scene and the scenario that makes it full and richer. And that's why there's been music with films for over 100 years, even in the silent days. Same thing.
Well, as we wrap up here, just one last question. You mentioned kind of the monster of this year, which is the, you know, pandemic of 2020. I'm sure it's interesting for you to return to this project as it, you know, it had its world premiere back in 2002. And through everything that has happened this year, especially for our composers and our performers, they've been hit hard in regards to performances and being able to actually go out into the public to connect with people with their music in that way. For you, how has this year been? And then is it strange returning to a project with that had connections to what seemed like, you know, a century ago, 2002, feels like it's so long ago compared to what we're dealing with in 2020?
Well, certainly. I had COVID-19 pneumonia myself. I was in the hospital. I know what got me through was my family and also thinking about future projects.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who are out of work on Broadway and at the Met Orchestra and the New York Philharmonic, and they're no longer getting paid. They're having a very, very rough time. I've spoken to a lot of friends in the business, conductors and instrumentalists, singers, and everybody initially had a state of a feeling of lethargy. And a lot of us who use our emotions to get out of jams have reacted by saying, you know what, I will try to find some other way of getting my art out there. So the great joy of radio and cable is the communication we can do through it. And my meeting you now and being with your wonderful listeners in Ohio, I can, again, send the message out. It's great to have recordings, so we're able to do that with recordings or live performances that are done through radio. But it's interesting that a communication form, radio, which started 100 years ago, is during this period the most vibrant. And that makes me feel very, very happy about the future of music, in that we can communicate now through your channel, through you and your listeners in Ohio, when I'm not able to get out to Bowling Green or wherever, which I have done in the past. And been there and had communication that's in a concert hall. So God willing, we'll get back to it. And I can travel the world and bring my voice to various places, as my friends all feel the same way.
Well, Michael Shapiro, thank you so much for joining us today. And it's such a joy to be able to, as you mentioned, talk over the phone and then bring you to the radio over the air. But also just great to talk about, again, this film score to the classic 1931 film Frankenstein. And I'm so honored to be able to share it with our listeners.
It's great to be alive on your station with you, Haley. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.